We're here with Cheryl Orletsky, otherwise known as the Dog Guru. She's the author of the book, My Dog Just Won't Listen to Me, How to Create Lasting Changes in Your Relationship with Your Dog. She's also the founder and director of Holiday Pet Care, the highly successful, completely cage-free dog daycare and boarding center. Cheryl's expertise in the pet care industry has spanned two decades. She conducts workshops, seminars, training, and mentorship internationally for pet owners and pet care professionals. As one of the top canine experts, Cheryl is a professional dog trainer, licensed presenter of dog safety, and a recurring pet expert on several animal-related shows and television networks. Today, Cheryl is going to share with us her three essential elements to having a well-mannered dog. Welcome, Cheryl. Thanks for being here with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is wonderful.
So, Cheryl, I know plenty of dog owners who run into countless frustrations with their dog. They would just love to have a dog who simply listens to them. Now, is this actually possible?
Yes, this is actually very possible. It's really all about understanding how they see the world and how they learn. Quite simply, dogs don't speak English or Hebrew or Mandarin or any other language that's out there that's a human language. In understanding how to get dogs to do what it is that we want them to do, the basic premise is we want to see how they learn, and we want to communicate in a way that they'll hear us.
Right. Okay. So can you give us a little background? I mean, why is it that you've become so passionate about teaching dogs what you call manners?
Well, for me, I understand that dogs live in our world, and we want them to live in our world. They are like our little fur babies in many people's homes, and yet they develop behaviors that people are just simply not happy with. They don't seem to want to listen to us. They don't respect the rules of our house. Sometimes when we're walking down the street, they can be rude to other dogs or other people. And as a result of these and many other behaviors, like possibly chewing and digging and pulling on leash and all the things that dogs do, many of them end up in the pound. And that's where my passion comes in, is I've seen so many animals, so many dogs specifically, that end up in the pound and in rescues, usually around 9 months to a year and a half of age, when they're in their prime of their adolescence, which is, if you know what being a teenager is about, I know I was one, being a teenager is all about pushing the boundaries. That's when they end up in the pounds, because quite simply they're showing behaviors that we don't necessarily like, but we didn't necessarily teach them what we did want. I've worked with rescue dogs for many years. Most of these dogs are simply misunderstood. So they're judged as being hopeless, that they can't be fixed, and they're given up on. With a little bit of help and patience, I like to teach the principles, like I will today here, to have these very same delinquent dogs, if you will, become wonderful family members. It's all just about understanding, patience, and communicating in a way that can actually be heard. We all want dogs that are going to be good citizens, that get along with other people, with dogs. We can be proud to take them places, sit on the patio and have a tea when we have a dog-friendly patio, or just simply enjoy life with them.
Definitely. Yeah, great. Well, now, in your seminars and training, I understand you've developed three essential elements of having a well-mannered dog. Now, are there really only three things to consider?
Yeah, I like to keep it simple. For me, when working with dogs, there's so many opinions out there, so many different dog trainers, TV shows, different ways of training, so to speak. And by keeping it simple and letting people know that there are the three main things to consider, people actually feel like they can make a difference in their life and in their life with their dog.
Well, I like to keep it simple, too. That's great. So you got my curiosity going here. Let's start at the first element that you speak about. What's that?
Well, the first element is exercise. Now, keeping in mind that with exercise, there is both physical and intellectual needs. We have to exercise the mind as well as the physicality of the dog. But what constitutes the physical exercise for dogs, for the most part, is running, wrestling, walks for certain breeds. Proper socialization with other dogs is very, very important as well, and that's sort of included in that exercise.
Okay, so why is it then that exercise is so important for creating good manners in your dog?
That's a good question. It's the way I like to say it, it's often like with kids, when you've got really rangy kids because they've been home because it's been a rainy day and they're stuck in, or in winter here in Canada, that they're stuck inside, they're not so. A tired dog is a better behaved dog. A tired child, one where we've exercised their mind, we've exercised their body, can often be a better behaved child too. So some people don't like me to draw the similarities between the two, but I find that helps people to understand because most people have been around children at some stage in their life. And just that stir crazy part is just a big part of what contributes to the lack of manners or the behaviors that we're not happy with.
Sure, that makes sense, yeah. So how is it that we know what amount of exercise is right for our dog? Like, all dogs are different, right?
Yeah, well, not all dogs necessarily are different. I like to categorize it a bit more by breed or breed mix. So as I mentioned before, there's physical and intellectual needs. So first, talking about physical, you can think about a dog such as a Border Collie or a German Shepherd or a Retriever. These dogs were meant to run. They were meant to be working dogs. So as a result, they have a fairly high amount, high need for exercise.
Okay.
What I consider for these ones, believe it or not, and most people don't even think it would be this much, is actually 2 to 3 hours of active exercise a day. So we're talking running, chasing the ball, basically possibly wrestling in an off-leash park or a dog daycare. Now, that you take that, and then you take a pug now, or the smushy nose face ones, the ones like the bulldogs, the snorty dogs. They can't even be outside in the summer. Like, it gets so hot that they actually can't be outside. So their form of exercise is going to be much less. It might just be playtime in the house or some short leash walks. So it's very dependent on the breed or the breed mix and what they were meant to do.
Okay, so one can just do some research on this online to learn more about their breed? Is that how you go about it?
That's exactly it. And actually, believe it or not, Wikipedia is a great resource. If you just do a Wikipedia search for your breed of dog, they've got an excellent the contributors to the Wikipedia community have really put together an excellent resource for understanding where the dog came from, what the breed mix is, or what the breeds are meant to do originally, which also goes for that point that I mentioned about the intellectual needs. For instance, you can take a Jack Russell. These guys were designed to be ratters or designed to be able to hunt out vermin. And so we now take a Jack Russell and we put him into an apartment where their biggest joy is looking out the window at things running by. They go stir crazy. So the intellectual needs are really needed there. And looking to see what your breed was meant to do originally, you can have a Japanese Chin, which was meant to be a lap dog, a royalty lap dog. So their needs are not going to be so high intellectually because they're meant to just sit there on your lap.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So moving along, I understand the second element you speak about is food. Now, can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure, I would love to. I'm a big advocate of proper feeding of dogs. Now, in understanding dogs, now I could go into this. I actually have a seminar that goes on for 2 hours that talks about food. So we're going to just cover the little bits today. But in understanding the food, what I like to talk about is, first of all, that the dogs are actually carnivores. Now, there are some people that there's some conflicting opinions amongst the experts, per se, whether they are true carnivores or not, but dogs are, most people agree that their main element of their diet should actually be meat. So in understanding that, there's a lot of different versions of it, whether it's kibble, whether it's homemade food, whether it's a raw diet, raw meaty bones, or a barf diet. There's a lot of different versions, but I think diet does play a huge part in having a well-mannered dog.
Right. So, I mean, I know how, as a person, food's really important to my own health. I don't quite get what it has to do with getting my dog to listen to me.
Oh, okay, yes, that makes sense. Well, the reason why it's a factor, because, of course, in our health, we can feel it in our own body. We don't necessarily know how the dog is feeling. But regardless of that, again, I will draw the analogy to children. When we have our children out there eating junk food, perhaps we're on a vacation or something, and they're getting more junk food than they should from the fast food restaurants or whatever, their behavior shows it. Everybody knows of what a sugar-high child looks like. Bouncing off the walls, they're crazy. Very much similar when it comes to the animals. When it comes to dogs that are not being fed the proper foods, then the result of that is that they have rangy behaviors, behaviors that don't seem to be easily controlled, because quite honestly, they're not in control of their own body because of what's being put into it.
Right. Right. So, I mean, in the store, there are dozens of brands of food for pets. Making a good choice is pretty confusing. Like, how does a typical pet owner make a really good choice for their dog?
Yeah, I've come up with actually the top three guidelines that I give to my clients with regards to choosing a manufactured food. Now, keeping in mind that even if you were to be choosing the homemade diets or the raw diets, these three categories or these three guidelines do still fit, but I've created them because a lot of people do still feed manufactured foods, and I want them to be able to choose the very best off of the shelves. So
right.
If it's okay, I'll go ahead and just list those three off.
Please do.
Okay, great. So the first one is that the first ingredient needs to be an identifiable meat. Now, what I mean by that is not the word meat or poultry. The word meat or poultry basically means anything that used to be an animal or a bird, right? So it's not necessarily a distinguishable meat. We want it to say beef, or we want it to say, lamb or chicken or salmon or something that is a specific type of meat as the first ingredient.
Okay, so it's not including like beaks and hooves, things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Which brings us to the second guideline, which is perfect, because the second guideline is absolutely no byproducts. Okay. Now, byproducts in, first of all, even byproducts in human food, that is what we find in our sausages or our hot dogs, and generally human quality food, it's still considered acceptable. In the animal food, it's a little bit different. Actually, it's a lot different. They put stuff in there we don't even want to get into as to what is considered byproducts. It's basically everything left over from the meat rendering, and much of it is not absorbable. It's not any quality whatsoever. So completely avoid the word byproduct on there. So if it says chicken and chicken byproducts, it's a no-no. Even though it said chicken, we can't have it because it said byproducts.
Okay, right.
Okay. Now, the third one is to avoid the use of cereal grains, specifically corn and wheat, things like that. These are fillers, and quite simply, they're fillers. They're a cheap filler, so they're put in there to make a bulk of food, but they don't actually have a lot of nutritional component for animals. Their animals' digestive system is set up very differently than a human's is, so how it is set up is designed to be more of a carnivore. They have a very short digestive tract, whereas humans have a long digestive tract. So they don't tend to absorb the carbohydrates that you would from grains like people would. So completely avoiding them. The nice little tip to this is if you're avoiding them, you actually get less of the poop to scoop in the backyard too, because quite honestly, they're just going right out the other end.
That's definitely a nice side effect for sure.
Yeah, a good bonus.
All right. Well, let's move on to the third element then, communication. Now, how would you say how do we communicate what we want our dogs to really do or not do in a way that makes sense to the dog?
Well, in order to have a dog listen to you, you must have an effective way of communicating, okay? Now, actually, that works the same for spouses and children, by the way. But I like to say that it is completely the responsibility of the communicator to have their message come across. So in other words, is if the being, again, we're talking about dogs here today, but take from it what you will, if the being is not getting the message, it is not the being's fault. It is the responsibility of the communicator to make sure their message is clear enough so that it can be received. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of misunderstandings that can lead to frustrations. These are what happens when we're not so aware of our communication style and how it is received. And as I mentioned before, dogs don't speak English. So we need to be able to speak in a way that they understand. Body language is very important. So now it's important in human communication too, but of course dogs don't communicate the same way even in body language, so it's slightly different. But how we carry ourselves, the consistency in how we present ourselves to our dog, even the way we pet our dog can give huge messages to your dog. I'm going to give you a tip here, which you might think I'm a little Looney Tunes, but I'm going to ask you to trust me on this one.
Sure.
When we communicate in how you pet our dog, many people don't realize that there's a difference between petting the dog on the top of the head and on the back of the neck and the scruffy part there and under the chin and under the bib. When we pet the dog under the chin and under the bib, we're actually giving them the message that they are in charge. And not in a big, scary, mean way, but what we're doing is if you were to actually watch mama dogs with their puppies, you will see that the little pups will come up and they will nibble and nuzzle and lick underneath the chin and the neck of the mama dog. Because this is an affectionate way of saying, hi there, okay, you're my mama dog, you're my mama dog. Now, if we're doing that to our dogs, we're confusing them.
Right.
Right? So we will give them a command, for instance, okay, sit, and then we pet them under the chin. So we're saying, okay, sit, I'd like you to do something for me, and then, okay, you're my mama. It just totally messes their brains up. And
yeah.
a lot of times when I have people do this test and just to try it when there's behaviors that are just not making sense, the change can be overnight in having the dogs go, oh, okay, all right, I now understand you with this one little tip. So.
Right. Well, yeah, and I'm sure you could definitely, you know, go on a lot. I would love to learn a lot more about that. I imagine that you offer that that kind of body language training in the seminars and in your book as well.
Yeah, because there's so many different steps to it. There's with how to present ourselves, and even of course we do want to use verbal communication as well. So we've spoken a little bit here about nonverbal, but of course there's verbal communication. We do speak to them, but how we can do that is with the way that we speak, the tone and the volume of our voice. Those are all important as well. A lot of people that get into dog training actually tend to shout too much. They tend to raise their voice too much, whereas in the dog world, in the way that dogs understand communication, if it is a verbal communication, is that someone who is in charge. Now, I have to, first of all, clarify, when I say in charge, I'm not talking about being domineering. I'm very particular when I teach, and in my book, My Dog Just Won't Listen to Me, and in the seminars I teach, I'm very particular about teaching the idea of being a leader. There's a lot of information out there about alpha pack and about alpha female, alpha male, and being dominant and being in charge. For me, they all mean the same thing. I know there's some people that take it a little bit strange, in my opinion, but for me, they all mean the same thing. And what that means is we are teaching. We are leading. We're letting them know clearly and concisely what it is that we want from them. So when I say that we're being in charge with our voice and being firm in our voice, but not shouting, that's being a leader. Because as soon as we start shouting, we have actually brought us down a notch because we're now sitting there arguing. We're being more of an equal than we are a leader.
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, this is really valuable information, Cheryl. I thank you. We've got to wrap up here. So before we do, are there any final tips that you can give our listeners?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I would really like to impress upon people is to really understand from the most loving place that I can that dogs are a different species. As much as we have them in our homes, we want them to be our fur children, we do have to remember that they're not human. It does not mean that they are less than or that they are in any way supposed to be abused or not taken care of properly, but they are not human. So they have requirements that are canine. By neglecting to understand these requirements, we're actually doing them a disservice. We are not respecting the being that they are, because in my opinion, all beings need to be respected for exactly who and what they are, and that includes dogs, cats, birds, spouses, children, whatever being that we are, whether it's the actual individual personality or whether it's the breed or the species that we are, is really important to respect to who they are. When dogs are not happy, they're simply acting out of frustration, boredom, confusion. And when they're not happy, that looks like barking, digging, chewing, possibly even aggression. So it's so, so important for me for people to really get the fact that a lot of these misbehaviors stem from the fact of a misunderstanding. And when we can start to work out that misunderstanding and start to be able to give tips to how to communicate so that the dogs want to listen to us, then everybody's happy.
Great. Well, it sounds like a perfect goal. And we'll just end on that note, but before we do, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I have a website. It's dogguru.ca, so I'll spell that. It's doggru.ca. And on that website, you can feel free, listeners can sign up for our e-zine, which is an email newsletter that goes out, which is packed full of tips and information for both pet owners as well as people that might be getting into the pet care industry. I actually have training that goes towards people that want to affect that many more animals by taking care of other people's animals or training as well. So that e-zine covers tips on a regular basis. And then, of course, there's Facebook. I love Facebook. It's great. It's a great way to share my wacky sense of humor as well as some information and some tips and be able to communicate with my students. And that. And Facebook is facebook.com/dogguru.ca. So exactly as the website is at the end of Facebook.
Great, Cheryl. Well, yeah, and so for our listeners, you can go to the website there, dogguru.ca, if you'd like to sign up for one of Cheryl's seminars or get some more information about her book. Again, this has been an interview with leading behavior expert and dog guru, Cheryl Orletsky. Cheryl, thank you for being here with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been a really wonderful conversation.
I agree. You have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.